את השם בשמחה, עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפנה בירננה, לפנה בירננה.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from the road between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Truth is that today I had a day where I had to take some important donors to Hebron, and I did that in the morning. I took them to the South Hebron Hills. I came home, I took a little bit of a rest, and then immediately took the bus. Yes, it was kind of rare. I don't take the bus often. I took the bus to Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem went down like many flights into the new train station. It's already a few years old, but still it's pretty new, and it's amazing feeling because it's huge and it's kind of very European, very big. And from there took the fast train, which took just 30 minutes all the way into Tel Aviv. Now, the truth is that I'm still bothered by the fact that maybe I still know New York better than Tel Aviv, which is very, to me, hurtful. It's like, come on, it's time to get to know our big city better than that old, God bless it, city of New York. It's time to get to know this amazing new reborn city of Tel Aviv. And coming out of the train station, what an energy. Wow, the place is hopping. Everybody's in at least one wheel, if not two wheels or other wheels. There's so many different kinds of wheels and everything's in motion, and it's just like it's got like a smell of New York crossed with like Barcelona, and it's Jewish and it's Israel and it's Mediterranean and it's hot and it's humid and it's tall and it's fast and it's awesome. Now, the reason I went to Tel Aviv is because tonight one of my favorite organizations, which is called Im Tirtzu, which is like Zionism for our time, but not like fluffy Zionism like some organizations that I just don't like their work so much, because I find that their work is kind of like, you know, what you expect to be said, the proper memes, the Hasbaras, blah organizations. Im Tirtzu is one of the organizations that I respect very much, and that's because these guys are on campus, they're fighting anti-Zionism, they're fighting various aspects, and they're fighting the courts. And they're protesting, and they make a lot of noise, and they also, you know, get a flavor of Zionism, fighting Zionism back into Israel, which is very important. Now, today happens to be that the head of Im Tirtzu, whose name is Matan Peleg, he put out a new book, and tonight was a select party. That's right, I got into the select party of nationalists, pro-Israel, Zionists. You might call them right-wing. You might call them, if you didn't know better, conservative. But frankly, it is the nationalist camp in Israel, I think, is the best way that we would describe it. So we were, you know, chosen to come to this book party, this book opening, this, what's the word?
Launch,
that's right, book launch. And went to this book launch, and it was great. Now, what is the book about? The book is about in a very important topic, which is, you know, you've heard on this show, a lot of times I talk about the anti-Israel narrative. But that anti-Israel narrative is not just a product of cool fashion. In fact, it is an agenda that is highly organized and highly paid for by various elements, especially, and was mentioned tonight, Germany and the EU, who are really outsourcing anti-Israelism and funding it. And tonight's book launch was all about research into the funding of anti-Israelism that happens every day. It happened to be that I went for a second, you know, as we do today, down to my phone to look up something about Germany in the news, as I was hearing about what Germany's up to, and I saw that it happened to be that Abu Mazen, the head of the PLOPA, the Palestinian Authority, was in Germany when he made a comment that Israel has done 50 Holocausts to the Palestinians. And then I saw that Germany themselves, the German chancellor, and then his spokesman, or I don't know, somebody else, came out with a statement saying, yes, we abhor this comment that erases the singularity of the Holocaust. So they weren't saying that Israel didn't do Holocaust. It's like, but don't compare it to the Holocaust because we don't want to erase that. And I was just listening to a speech about the funding that these guys are giving to Abu Mazen and to anti-Israelism. And I wrote on Twitter, you know, don't give us, spare us your crocodile tears. You know, don't tell us how you're trying to protect the memory of the singularity of the Holocaust when we all know that you guys are involved today in anti-Israelism and you're outsourcing your anti-Israel, your Israel hate to others. And that's the truth. And then and then that tweet started going very quickly. And then, as often happens to me, when a tweet is exciting and hot, somehow you could feel that Twitter hits the brakes and shadow bans that tweet because there's a keyword there or something that they don't want. They don't want you to diss Germany. They don't want you to say Holocaust. They don't want you to do that. So another part of the narrative war is the suppression of different narratives. In any case, at this event, I bumped into a friend, a person who I know has done so much for Israel and continues to do a lot for Israel, and yet a lot of his work is behind the scenes, and he is Advocate Maurice Hirsch. Maurice has spent 20 years in the JAG office, the Israeli, what do we call that? The
Military Advocate General.
Military Advocate General, which is JAG, is that correct? That's right. And Maurice happens to live in my town, and he's giving me a ride home. So we are driving between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, these two centers of culture and of what Israel is. I mean, if you want to say what Israel is Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. That's a way to understand what Israel is today. Advocate Maurice is also today working with Palestinian Media Watch, PMW, which is an organization that is revealing oftentimes to the world and to policymakers what the Palestinian Authority is up to, and shows their, you know, their duplicity, their hate for Israel, the educational hate for Israel. So let me start with this. I want you to know, Maurice, that I have a garbage problem in Hebron. In Hebron, we have a garbage problem because Arabs, a lot of times, and I don't mean to stereotype, but this is generally is true, have a problem with modern garbage systems. And so there was a lot of overflow in garbage, especially plastics. And there's a place I'm working on to clear it up so it will be open to the spring of Abraham. There's always garbage strewn around there. Anyway, I was walking there yesterday, and I found textbooks. Fourth or fifth grade textbooks, Arab textbooks from the Palestinian Authority, with being thrown out, and also a handwriting of a child. And I took out my phone, and I opened up Google Lens, and guess what I saw? That these textbooks are filled with subtle anti-Israel messages, and not so subtle, but total Palestinian nationalism, which you can read and you can understand is anti-Israelism, but of course the teacher will strengthen that. So let's just for a second talk about school books. Okay, what is the fourth and fifth grader living in the Palestinian Authority next door being taught, and how do you guys at PMW identify it, and what can we do about it?
So let me tell you something like this. One of the school books that they have for fifth graders, we're talking about 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds. That's basically the age group. One of their school books talks about the heroes of a nation, how every nation has its heroes. Every nation's heroes are the ones that they are the people who are looked up to. They are the ones who are the inspiration for, really, for the next generation. We have Israeli heroes, we have biblical heroes, and that's the Jewish people. That's how we see to extend our leadership. For the Palestinians and these kids, they are spoon-fed who are these heroes. So the heroes that they have include Abdul Qadir el-Husseini, the leader of the Arab forces against the Jews, trying to wipe out the Jewish state. And amongst the other terrorists that are mentioned there, they have this woman called Dalal Mughrabi. Now, Dalal Mughrabi, if you haven't heard the name, it's like one of these people that every person should know who Dalal Mughrabi is in order to understand what it means that Palestinian children are being taught that she is a hero and that she is a source of their inspiration.
All right, who is Dalal Mughrabi?
So who is Dalal Mughrabi? Dalal Mughrabi was 20 years old when she died. She has one claim to fame, one thing alone. The fact that she led Israel's most deadly terrorist attack in 1978 on the coastal road, she took a group of Palestinians, they got on a bus, and they murdered everyone. 37 people, 12 children, were murdered by Dalal Mughrabi. She is the Palestinian hero. She is the one that the Palestinian children are being taught to look up to as the Palestinian who first raised the flag of Palestine on the bus of the Zionist conquerors.
Mm.
Just imagine being told that the person that you have to look up to is Muhammad Abu al-Atta, the 9/11 bomber. Like, he's your source of inspiration. He's the one you should look up to. He's the one who you should think about, that you want to emulate his actions. And that's what the Palestinian Authority is teaching their children. They have girls' schools that wear the picture of Dalal Mughrabi on the front of their T-shirts. And they have school competitions. The Dalal Mughrabi school basketball competition. Dalal Mughrabi is everywhere. That's what they teach them.
Right. You know when somebody's listening to us right now, they hear what you're saying, and it's like, yeah, that's horrible. But when I held in my hand the school book and I saw a child's writing in it, and I took it home, by the way. I took the school book home. I have it. I saw a child's writing in it. I suddenly saw the young child. I didn't see Dalal Mughrabi. I saw the child learning about Dalal Mughrabi. I saw the input into the mind.
What you saw, Yishai, what you saw happening in the school books, and you see happening in the school books, is the same type of socialization that brought about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Nothing different. It took the Germans 6-7 years to change the education system to make sure that by the time they got the German soldiers got to be 18-19 years old, they could take them into the woods, bring out the Jews, and slaughter them. Mm-hmm. That's what the Palestinian Authority is teaching. It's that same process of socialization, of indoctrination, that the Nazis did. That is the Palestinian Authority. There is no difference.
So what you just said, for all intents and purposes, is that the Palestinian Authority is a neo-Nazi type of organization. You're saying that they are teaching Israel murder, Israel hate, and that's the kind of stuff that's inside. Now, when we say Palestinian Authority, it doesn't mean somewhere far away. Like Hebron, Jewish Hebron is within the Palestinian Authority. And East Jerusalem, parts of Eastern Jerusalem, have these school books. Have Palestinian school books. So you're not talking about something far away. We're not talking about Pakistan or Indonesia here. We're talking about right around here. And certainly that influences Israeli Arabs as well.
We're talking about our immediate neighbors. We're talking about people who, that we have no opportunity not to interact with them. They are around on our streets, on our roads. They wander around freely amongst us. There's more and more Palestinians coming into Israel every single day. The world likes to talk about this lie, literally the lie, that's called the blockade of Gaza. In the last year, 250,000 entries from Gaza into Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That's just from Gaza. Mm-hmm. Every day coming into Israel, there are 80,000 Palestinians with permits and another 40,000 without permits. These are the people who learned that Jews are the source of all evil, exactly as the Nazis taught, that Jews need to be killed. The Jews are the ones that have stolen the Palestinian homeland.
Let's talk about, for a second, the head of the snake. And that's this dude by the name of Mahmoud Abbas. Now, Mahmoud Abbas was famous for being the financier of the 1972 Munich Olympics, of which we're recalling now 50 years. commemorating 50 years
of the massacre.
Of the massacre, 1972 Munich Olympic massacre of the 11 Israeli athletes. He was behind that. And he's also famously the author of a doctorate in Moscow on Holocaust denial. And here he was in Germany now, a guy who denies the Holocaust, is working for the destruction of Israel, is certainly at very minimum part of the replacement narrative of Palestine. Like in this textbook that I pulled out of the garbage, the most visceral and obvious thing of them all is the constant flags over Jerusalem of the Palestinian flags. There's an erasure of our claim and a replacement, what I call a replacement narrative, of their claim. So here's this guy, and he's in Germany, and he makes a tremendous claim. He says Israel has done 50 Holocausts. And he says this in Germany, and at the time, the chancellor, I don't even know the new chancellor's name, didn't walk out.
Schulz.
He didn't walk out or anything like that. Afterwards, he tweeted a correction, but he wasn't shocked at in the moment. And also his answer, I think, was actually not very correcting at all. It's just like, oh, actually the Holocaust is specific, but, if you gave it a different name, then maybe it would be okay to say that Israel has committed 50 Holocausts. So tell me a little bit about Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, and what's his standing? What's he doing for anti-Israelism? Is he indeed an heir to Yasser Arafat? And what is the state of Israel? And we're going to get to that in the next question, really, which is, what is the state of Israel doing or not doing about it?
So Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas was the eternal number two to Yasser Arafat until Arafat died, and then he became number one, as opposed to Arafat, who had this air about him of being a terrorist. He was always dressed in what appeared to be military fatigues, never served a day in his life as a soldier. He was just a terrorist. But Mahmoud Abbas wanders around in a suit. He has his doctorate. He is the father of the ideology of hate against Israel. From A to Z, everything that the Palestinian Authority does comes down from Abu Mazen. So let's talk a little bit about Abu Mazen. Firstly, his doctorate talks about the idea that the Zionists cooperated with the Nazis in order to wipe out the Jews of Europe and to get rich. That's his theory. If the Holocaust happened, there were 3,000 people that died, certainly not 6 million, because that's just not true. They are living somewhere around the world. The guy can intellectually explain to you that the Holocaust didn't happen. Like, just let that sink in for a second. Intellectually explain that the Holocaust didn't happen. Like, that's just unbelievable. And that message goes down all the way through the PA. So let's put that on one side. He is a Holocaust denier. Secondly, this is a man that goes on Palestinian television and says, we are the Palestinians. Our claim to Palestine, to this land, to the land of Israel, dates from before Abraham. We were here before Abraham.
You mean Philistines? Canaanites.
Don't try and attribute anything to that, because at one stage they're Philistines, at one stage they're Jebusites, at one stage they're Canaanites. There's always a different story as to exactly who and what they came from, and to suit every period of time, every time he wants to talk about something else. So he comes from a different people. But his basic claim is to, as you said, replacement theory, replacement narrative. He has to say that he was here before Abraham, because Abraham's the Jews. Abraham is promised the land of Israel for the Jews. And so comes along Mahmoud Abbas on Palestinian. This is the leader of the so-called people, saying intellectually again, we are the descendants of this 5,000-year-old people without any proof whatsoever. It's not like the Romans or the Greeks or the... We're 5,000 years old. Don't try and ask now rhetorical questions, like simple things. Well, when were the Palestinians actually born? How can they be Palestinians? There's no P in Arabic. They're the only people in the world that can't pronounce their own name. This is the intellectual feat that he goes through. He will then take that on to every level. What everybody should hear now and should know about is the pay for slave program, where the PA pays every terrorist in jail a monthly salary as a reward for terrorism, as a reward for slaughtering Jews. That is a program of Mahmoud Abbas. It is Mahmoud Abbas who passed the law in the PA that really entrenched that whole system of payments. It's Mahmoud Abbas in 2006 who raised the payments. It's Mahmoud Abbas again in 2010 who raised them even more, on some occasions raising the salaries by 300%. Salaries to people who murder Jews. So we're not only talking about someone who teaches the ideology of the Nazis, kill Jews. We're talking about someone who takes it one step further and says, you know what, if you actually kill Jews, I'm going to pay you a financial reward. Now imagine this type of thing, let's say in America, lo aleinu. In America, imagine an organization offering a financial reward to murder black people. Like, imagine that. Never mind Black Lives Matter. Black lives don't matter so much that you're even going to be paid a reward to murder them. That's what Mahmoud Abbas does. But it isn't black people, it's Jews. And because it's Jews, it's apparently okay. You can pay rewards to people for murdering Jews, and that's perfectly fine. The world will accept that. This is the same Abu Mazen, the same Mahmoud Abbas, who passes a law in the Palestinian Authority raising the punishment for selling land to Jews to the death sentence. Now, when you're talking about apartheid South Africa, even in apartheid South Africa, blacks were allowed by the graces of the white racists to own 7% of the land in South Africa. In the Palestinian Authority, by the word of Mahmoud Abbas, a Jew cannot own any land. If you sell land to a Jew, you get put to death. This is racism from every way, shape or form that you can understand. Area A and B under Palestinian Authority control, 40% of Judea and Samaria, is off limits to Jews, not to Israelis. Israeli Arabs can wander around there happily. Foreigners who are Arabs can wander around there happily. Who can't go into those areas? Jews. That's Abu Mazen. That's his policy all the way through. Abu Mazen's idea is very clear, and the ideology that he passes on is that Israel has no right to exist. In a speech in the UN last year, he said, we'll do you a favor. We'll go back and we'll now accept the partition plan from 1947. Like, who do you think you are? You weren't even around in 1947. Palestinians didn't exist in 1947. If you read the partition plan, I'm a lawyer, right? So in every document you read what's there and what isn't there. If in 1947 there was a group of people, a defined group of people called Arab Palestinians, then the partition plan would have said there's going to be a Jewish country and there's going to be a Palestinian country. What does the partition plan say? Jewish country and Arabs. Palestinians didn't exist. And Abu Mazen says, if you don't agree to my preconditions of destroying the state of Israel, then I'll accept the partition plan. And what is his major, the next part of his plan? The next part of the plan, one of the PLO hacks was this guy called Saib Arakat. Thank God, Jew hater. Thank God he's no longer with us. He died of COVID, actually in an Israeli hospital. Good that he's gone. Good riddance.
I forgot about him. I had his email address.
And yeah, I forgot about Saeed Barakat. He was a real troublemaker.
He was just an animal as well. So he's dead. But one of the things that he said on Palestinian television is that in 2008, Ehud Olmert, our convicted prime minister, offered Abu Mazen more land than the entire area of Judea Samaria and the Gaza Strip in 1967. And he said no. He said no. Well, look at that. We're going past the oppressed people. An X16, beautiful car.
Yeah.
Palestinian plates driving through the middle of Israel. Right. Unbelievable. That's one of Abu Mazen's crony friends. So he says that Abu Mazen refused. Why did Abu Mazen refuse? Because part of Olmert's plan was that only 150,000 so-called Palestinian refugees would be allowed back into Israel. That wasn't enough for Abu Mazen. Abu Mazen wants every single Palestinian refugee, so-called, to come back into Israel. That means allowing 5.6 million Arabs who have never been here, they've never stepped a day in their life, they've never been in Israel, because the UNRWA, the other Jew-hating UN organization, registers them as refugees. He wants every single one of them to come back into Israel to democratically obliterate the Jewish state. That's his goal. And he says it all the time.
So it's terrorism on the one hand, supporting the murder of Jews by supporting terrorists and killers. Then it's teaching, you know, the children and through the textbooks. Then it's calling for using the UN, the international community, to call for the so-called refugees to come back to the land of Israel, but really it means to flood Israel with people that were never born here in order to vote them out. And it's also to accept a smaller Israel and then terrorize it through rockets and other things. So, okay, this guy is running a multi-front war to destroy Israel, and sometimes he puts on a suit he always puts on a suit to talk nice. He knows how to talk diplomatically, but you've identified him as an overt enemy, and you've in other words called him the head of a snake of a Nazi type of organization within Israel. Now here's the real question, and we're speaking with Maurice Hirsch, an advocate, 20 years in the Israeli JAG office of the head of the prosecution of Judean Samaria Army prosecution, and today working for PMW. Here's the big question. Everything that you said now is basically patently true, and a short perusal of Abu Mazen's work will identify him as an anti-Semitic activist, a person who's seeking to destroy Israel. But there's another side. And the other side is that the state of Israel supports Abu Mazen. Recently, in the last few months, Benny Gantz invited Abu Mazen to his home, I think it was once or twice, came to him, and they see him, the Israeli system sees him as a partner. Maybe not a partner for peace, but a partner to keep the lid on the pot. And oftentimes when pay for slay is blocked, they find a way to give them loans to pay off the goons and to make sure that basically the money to the terrorists sitting in jails keeps flowing. And not only is Israel not saying no, not only is Israel like not fighting it, they're actively, bottom line, supporting it. And I've got many more examples of actual support, and it's basically well known. And if you like deal with a guy like Isa Amru, who's an anti-Israel activist in Hebron, whenever I say to him, listen, you know, the Palestinian Authority that you also work for are anti-Semitic, corrupt, anti-Arab folks, he says, Palestinian Authority? That's nothing but contractors of the state of Israel. Like, you guys make these, like, and he says, there is no Palestinian Authority without Israel. And that's the real reality, the uglier reality. And so, okay, I accept what you're saying, but explain to me how I, as a real, like a person who knows what's going on, how am I supposed to swallow the reality that the state of Israel is is the backer. And it's certainly not the destroyer. If we wanted to, one bullet from one special operation guy would take out Abu Mazen, or many myriads of other ways of just turning off the tap. You could turn off the electricity or the water on the terrorists. You could certainly close bank accounts and freeze them. And you know that our guys, that our intelligence community is following him in every step. And you know that they know every transaction that he does. They could block these things, but they don't. They choose not to. And they see them as partners for controlling the Palestinian population. So, Advocate Maurice Hirsch, can you help me understand how am I supposed to understand that? Am I supposed to understand that the State of Israel is actually the backer of its own haters?
Also, I don't think you actually really understand the depth of the depravity of the situation. Based on the Oslo Accords, Israel gathers tens of millions of shekels in taxes every month, hundreds of millions, in fact, for the Palestinian Authority. We provide the Palestinian Authority with 65% to 70% of their budget. We don't need, in any way, shape, or form, guns. All we need to do is turn off the money. The Palestinian Authority cannot exist without money. We provide them with the money. Sadly, Issa Amru is it 100% right. They only exist because we allow them to exist. And so the question is, well, why do we do that? And the answer is that for the last 25 years, we've been stuck in this rut of conceptual misunderstanding of really denying reality and trying to ignore the reality that's right in front of us. It started already with Oslo, and the first day that Yasser Arafat came into Gaza, in the car that he was driving in, he had illegal weapons, and he was sitting on terrorists whose entry had been refused. So you're now the soldier there, you're waiting to understand, what is the instruction, what am I meant to do? And what does Yitzhak Rabin do? He says, it's okay, we can deal with another terrorist, let him in. But this is the basis of the agreement. If you cannot respect the agreement from day one, then what do you expect there to be at the end? And if you, really, it's just like a child. If you tell a child, don't throw stones, and he throws stones anyway, and you're saying, oh, it's not so bad. What did the child learn? That you can throw stones. It doesn't matter. It has no consequences. And that's what we've taught the Palestinians and the Palestinian Authority from day one of Oslo, that they can breach the accords, that they can do whatever they want, they can promote terrorism, and we're not going to do anything. And constantly in that same conceptual rut that maybe one day they'll change because we just want peace. So I can understand if you do that for a year, if you do that for 2 years. This is now going on for 27 years. It's way beyond any type of misunderstanding. This is the Palestinian Authority. We know exactly what they are. So now the security establishment comes up with a new idea. Well, we have to maintain the Palestinian Authority because the alternative is Hamas. Hamas are these crazy Islamic fundamentalist nut jobs who all they want to do is murder Jews. And they are clearly worse than the Palestinian Authority. Well, so I fundamentally, as you understand from what I've said previously, fundamentally disagree with that. I don't think that Hamas is any different from the Palestinian Authority in any way, shape or form. To a great extent, that Hamas, as I heard today from someone amazing, I had an amazing day today, but an expression I heard today, Hamas, and it's right, Hamas is a strategic problem, right? Because you have to deal with them and really learn how to avoid their armaments, avoid them arming themselves, avoid them shooting rockets at the Jews. That's fine. The PLO and the PA is an existential problem, because Hamas just wants to murder the Jews. They don't have any type of desire to set up a Palestinian state. They just want one big Muslim state from the Atlantic Sea through to the Gulf. That's what they want. They believe in this Muslim caliphate. Whereas Abu Mazen wants to set up this Palestinian state and destroy the Jewish state. And whereas Hamas seem to be just plain terrorists, the PLO, PA, are seen to be moderate. That's how they've managed to sell themselves all the time. And so Israel plays into that narrative. All our governments so far for the last 25 years have played into that narrative. Mahmoud Abbas, the PA, PLO, are the moderates within the Palestinian society when you compare them to Hamas. And that's the fundamental problem with the way that the security establishment in Israel sees the Palestinian Authority. They see them as sometimes partners. They've sanctified this idea of the Israeli-Palestinian security coordination, which exists. The PA, PLO, actually coordinates with Israel for the purpose of arresting terrorists, which is an amazing statement. Like, that just contradicts everything that I just said. But then you have to understand, and I say that not just as someone from the street, from someone who is in the system for 20 years, what is the nature of that security coordination? That's the big question. So what does it mean, this security coordination? Hamas are trying to take over the PA. They won the elections in 2006, and they should be the rightful leaders of the PA. Abu Mazen deposed them. Military coup, threw the government out. In Gaza, Hamas got their revenge, threw the Fatah people off roofs, and took control. In Judea and Samaria, Abu Mazen is still hanging on for dear life. So what's the security coordination? Fatah, Abu Mazen, PA, PLO, give up to Israel the Hamas activists. Israel goes and arrests them. Obviously, it's good for us to arrest terrorists. But he's not doing it because he has anything, any type of compassion for Israel, any desire really to avoid terrorism. He's doing it to get rid of his own enemies from within. Mm-hmm. Israel is doing his dirty work. And that's the security coordination that the Israeli security establishment so sanctifies. Well, it's so important. How can we manage without the security cooperation? We can manage quite fine. We had 6 months last year where there was no security coordination. There were no extra terror attacks. We know how to deal with it perfectly well by ourselves. But at every stop on the way, you have the security establishment, which is predominantly left-dominated, that is constantly trying to push this idea of we have to make peace with the Palestinians. Now, that's wonderful. I'm sure that, and I don't say this lightly, and I say it with my father-in-law as a Holocaust survivor, that's almost akin to the people in Auschwitz going to the Gestapo guard saying, well, let's make peace. That's basically their mindset. This guy doesn't want to make peace with you. He wants to kill you. There is nothing in him that wants to make peace with you. He doesn't see you as a human being. And it doesn't matter how much you want to make peace with him, because he's not interested. And we can try and feed ourselves that garbage every day that the Palestinians just want to make peace. You know what? A lot of the Palestinians are happy to live with Israel. They would prefer to live under Israel. They would prefer not to be under the yoke of the Palestinian Authority. When you ask the Palestinians in surveys that they conduct, they say more than 50% say that the PA should disband itself. They hate them because they are dictators. It's full of nepotism, corruption. It's just the worst situation for them. But when you're talking about their leadership, all they see is Jews as the evil of the world. And unfortunately, Israel is stuck in that same mindset of well, we started on the path of Oslo, we started on this path of peace, and we're going to do no matter what we need to do in order to try and make that happen. It doesn't matter what the, almost doesn't matter what the Palestinians do. Palestinians pay salaries to terrorists, we punish them, Benny Gantz gives them, takes away with the right hand and gives them back with the left hand. It's just unbelievable. And the sadness of it all is that in the left wing's race after Abu Mazen, in trying to persuade him to make peace with us, they are the ones who are really destroying any hope of peace here. Because as long as the PLO exists, there will never be peace in Israel. The Arabs will never make peace with us. Because they are the ones who are pushing the hatred. And so whilst the left wing is constantly trying to push on this idea of, well, let's make peace. And unfortunately, obviously the question is, well, how do you explain the 10 years of the Netanyahu governments from 2009 to 2019-20? Well, the answer is that he always had some type of an excuse as to why he couldn't cancel the Oslo Accords, as to why he couldn't clearly say that the Palestinian Authority is bad. And that's part of Israeli politics, of the these evil coalitions that need to be made in order to make a government. And really the tremendous leeway that every leader has to give to small parties almost that can dictate policy.
Well, in Netanyahu's case, in let's also be real about that. He is somewhere there, also a two-state statist. He has voted consistently for those kind of things, and famous Bar-Ilan speech, et cetera, et cetera. You've said a lot, Advocate Maurice Hirsch, and I'm going to ask you one last question, and you can keep it short if you want, but you've been in the system for a long time. You've seen terrorists, you've prosecuted them. You follow what the bad guys are saying and doing, how they're funneling money into the state of Israel to fight Israel, brainwashing young children, paying terrorists, using the international community against us. And still, of course, the state of Israel is winning in the sense that it's growing economically, people-wise, more religion, more love of Judaism. Israel is stronger today, albeit much smaller physically. I just want to ask you, kind of in finality here, which is, how do you do it? How do you, you know, you're now, I don't know what, 25 years in this business, more. How do you emotionally deal with the challenges of A, having enemies all around us and within certainly the places where you and I live, and also with the reality that we talked about in the question previous, which is the state of Israel's tacit approval of these things and really being our own worst enemy? And as you were talking, by the way, I just wanted to add one thing, which is there's a great parable for what you're talking about. Everybody knows about Noah's Ark. But the Medrash says that another creature that was part of Noah's Ark was actually Og, who was later to be king of the Golan, the Bashan, and he's this like big giant, and in a sense he's kind of evil, and he's holding on to the Ark, and there's a hole, and Noah's feeding this giant through this hole. And I always thought that was a great example of, like, here you have the state of Israel, it's like this ark and it's beautiful and it's saving the Jews, and yet we're feeding the monster, and it's hanging onto our boat and it's floating along and it's there, and we're kind of feeding it. You're feeding the, remember Little Shop of Horrors, the Audrey to, right? Feed me Seymour, that's right. So I always feel it's that way. So that's my really question. You can keep it short. Just how do you deal with it all? Like, how do you make sense of it in your mind? How do you go to sleep at night?
So I think the answer to this is really very, very personal. But I'll tell you anyway. I am a Zionist. I have faith. I came to Israel to serve in the Israeli army, to do good for Israel, to promote Israel's cause. And that's what I've been doing for 25 years since I since I arrived in Israel, and I believe in what they call in Hebrew Tzidkat HaDerech, that this is the country of the Jewish people. This is our only place. We have nowhere else to be. And we have to fight for every inch of the land of Israel, because this is ours. This is our homeland. This is the place that for 2,000 years, Jews only dreamt about living in. And we're now living in this generation, an unbelievable time, where Jews have come back to Israel. We've built this amazing country. We've built an amazing economy. We have an amazing society. We have Jewish kids learning Torah in schools all over the country. There are yeshivas. There are more Jews learning Torah and than any previous time in the last 3,000 years. And we have this amazing right to be living here, this to be living at this. We're part of that dream. We're part of this chain of generations, just living the dream of millions of Jews who were murdered in the Holocaust. That one day we'll come back and we'll be in Jerusalem. We'll be able to have our children and we're living the this morning, like I said to you, I had an unbelievable day today, just a Zionist day from A to Z. I was in the Shomron this morning with Bar Zaetzny and with Benny Katsova, really one of the
I did that tour as well.
The founding members of just unbelievable of the settlements in Judea and Samaria, just, and you're talking about living the prophecies of our prophets, that the Jews will come back. Jeremiah said, Jews will come back and plant grapevines in the Shomron. There haven't been grapevines in the Shomron for 3,000 years. And suddenly, you drive around the Shomron today, it's covered with grapevines. We're living this prophecy of the Jewish people coming back to the Jewish homeland. I gave a lecture a few weeks ago on 100 years to the British Mandate.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, 100 years to the British Mandate? 100 years of the international community recognizing, if you haven't read a Zionist document in your life, read the Mandate for Palestine.
That's right. That's right. I'm very, you really caught, that happens to be a specific issue that I'm very keen on. People can hear your British accent, and I caught earlier also your South African words there. I caught them. So you're originally born in South Africa, but British, raised British. The British messed up, and in the 40s we had to kick them out of here. But it is a mistake to only remember the British as occupiers that needed to be kicked out in the late 10s, what do you call it, in the 1917, the Balfour Declaration, and 1920, the San Remo Accords, and then 1922, the League of Nations Mandate for Palestine, which was always pushed by the British, was really where Israel was born. The truth is Israel was born in 1917, and it's populated after the Holocaust. Truth of the matter is World War I was actually when Israel was born, and the liberation of the land of Israel from the Ottoman Empire was actually the key moment. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people don't know that. And Israelis are way stuck on what the UN said later on, which is the partition plan, and it was practically meaningless, and really was reneging on good law that was written beforehand. And people just don't understand. The truth is that it was Lloyd George, it was Balfour, it was even Allenby, it was other people that were great Zionists, and at the time, that's where, you know, Israel was born in Whitehall, was born when Allenby kicked out the Turks from Beersheba, from Yafo, and went up to Jerusalem and liberated Jerusalem, and kind of that's an misunderstood and so vital important. So it's you're absolutely right. The founding document, of course, is the League of Nations Mandate for Palestine.
It's the international community saying in that document that we hereby recognize the historical connection of the Jewish people, not the Palestinians, of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. They call it Palestine, but that's technical, to the land of Israel, and for their right to reconstitute their national homeland, not to create de novo, not to create something new that never existed, but to reconstitute their national homeland. This is the nations of the world saying that. This isn't the Jews. This isn't Herzl. This isn't the Zionist Congress. This is the nations of the world getting together in an international document and saying, this piece of land is the historical right of the Jewish people. And that's what we're doing here. Every day, you get up and you fight for the Jewish country, you fight for the Jewish people and their right to settle every single centimeter, every single millimeter of the land of Israel, because that's not only our God-given right, but it's also the God-given right via the international community, saying that this is the Jewish people's right. And that's something that we have to fight about every single day. There will always be detractors, and it doesn't matter how much these people hate us. It simply doesn't matter. As much as they've been fighting us, as much as they didn't want settlements in Judea and Samaria, from 1970, there wasn't a Jew in 1967. There wasn't one Jew in Judea and Samaria. Today, there are 500,000 Jews living in Judea and Samaria. It's just unbelievable. We're living that dream every single day. The Jewish people.
Advocate Maurice Hirsch, thank you very much for this time. And as we were talking about these things, we have driven almost all the way up the mountain range of Judea and Samaria into Judea from Tel Aviv, and experiencing really all the magic of a reborn Israel. Now it's nighttime here and we're almost home. It's late. I want to thank you very much for this conversation. Wish you lots of blessings, and thank you for making our listeners, if not smarter, and then also more impassioned. God bless you, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks very much. Have a good day.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show. More great stuff is on the way. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. We'll be right back.
Don't worry. The Yishai Fleisher Show will be right back, so stay tuned.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting from Judea to the world. You're part of it wherever you are. I want to thank the folks that make this show possible, like my team, which is Moshe Herman, Yocheved, Ben Bresky, Tabitha, and Lou when we're live. Folks that make the show really happen and getting it out to you. I'm honored to be on your team, and thank you for being on mine. You guys are great. And there's all kinds of other folks that are on the team as well, including Edward, who just bought 36 coffees at buymeacoffee.com, which is his way to support the Yishai Fleisher Show. So you go to buymeacoffee.com/Yishai. That's easy and fun. And thank you, Edward, and all the folks that give at Buy Me a Coffee. It makes a difference. It makes me chipper, happy, helpful, help pay, you know, for various aspects. There's a lot of little things that we pay for to make the show happen. It's a great honor, and thank you very much for that coffee. It's virtual coffee, of course. It's digital coffee. It's not real coffee. You understand. It's like a kind of currency. Coffee is a currency. You know that. I also want to thank the sponsors of our show, including Prohibition Pickle. I don't know if you saw this week. I put a picture of myself with a big, big, mean salami. It tasted mean, too. It had a mean taste. It had a garlicky, just awesome taste to it. And I had it on the Shabbat, on Shabbat Nachamu, where Malka and I celebrated our anniversary. And thank you so much for all the people who wrote to me and wished us a happy anniversary. That was really nice. I also want to thank my good friend Dr. Brodsky for sending in a good donation, a great donation, an awesome donation. All donations are good donations, you know. And we got to thank Hashem for all the parnasa, the welfare that he gives us. And thank you to the Brodsky family for being part of the show and being part of the efforts to beautify Eretz Yisrael, to strengthen it, and to build it together. I want to thank, so I was saying, who was I saying? Oh, right, Prohibition Pickle, prohibitionpickle.co.il, and the awesome salami and the awesome hot sauce, which I'm going to have this Shabbos, Prohibition Pickle makes my Shabbos spicy. Check it out and make somebody else's Shabbat spicy by sending it out. And I know some good friends of mine in Yerushalayim, the Pittengers, they're always eating, you know, a Prohibition Pickle every Shabbat. So it's really cool. I want to thank also the good folks at the Hebron Fund. People are reaching out to me day in, day out about getting to Hebron this summer. It is like, I'm telling you, when I say day in, day out, I'm not exaggerating. Every day somebody wants to get to Hebron, and I'm always recommending the incredible, the unique product of Rabbi Simcha Hachmam and the Hebron Fund Tour. It's just unstoppable. It's like twice a week. Yesterday, there was like 120 people in Hebron on the Hebron Fund Tour. It's hebronfund.org/tour. Book it, be there, and be moved like that. So check that out. I want to thank the folks that get our show out. And really, there's two main news agencies that I want to really thank, and that is JewishPress.com. One of my favorite news emails is JewishPress.com. And when I say that, I'm not just saying that because, you know, it's a plug. I literally, that's the email that I read every day. Is JewishPress.com to see what's happening in the Jewish world, what's happening in Israel. It's really a broad sweep of the issues that matter. They send out this Jewish Express. I say sign up for it because I really like it, enjoy it, and it gives me the news from a religious slant, yes, from a nationalist slant, but yet informative and clear, and I guess, how should we say it, and open-minded and broad. But still Jewish and the Israel news that you need. So that's JewishPress.com. And of course, our good friends at Israel365News.com and Israel365.com, a host of products, including the inspirational Israel 365 email every single day. And one of my favorite products, ones that I have given to important people, including Vice President Mike Pence, is the Israel Bible, an amazing product. And I want you to send me a picture of your Israel Bible at home, because I have a feeling you already have one or get one, getting one. And the Israel Bible is a beautiful, you know, Bible. It's almost competitive with the, you know, the non-Jewish Bibles that are out there. I mean, I love those non-Jewish leather-bound Bibles. And now, God bless the good folks who, you know, have, you know, more text than the, you know, original traditional Jewish Bible, the so-called Old Testament with the so-called New Testament. We don't really like that language. But I want to tell you, those leather-bound Bibles that you guys have, gosh, those are beautiful. And we in the Jewish world need to make those leather-bound Bibles. But in the meantime, we do have a beautiful, fabulous Bible, which is called The Israel Bible. So appropriate. Love it. Love that name, The Israel Bible. And you know what? I love everything about it. I love its look and feel. I love that it has the cover of the Six-Day War on it. I love that it's made by Koren with the Koren font. I love the commentary about the land of Israel and the translation and transliteration that appears in specific verses, the transliteration, editing by my good friend, Rabbi Tully. And you can get it at the Israel Bible, theisraelbible.com/Yishai. I'm so lucky that my name gets to be associated with the Israel Bible, and your name should be associated with it as well. So go to theisraelbible.com, and then coupon code Yishai, bang, 10% off God's Holy Word. Very good. Now, speaking of God's Holy Word, let's finish off the show with a little bit of Table Torah. And as I always say every single year, and I said it last week's show as well, there's a problem with the book of Deuteronomy, the book of Dvarim. It's hard to give a Dvar Torah. What I mean by that, it's hard to, like, explain something or see a deeper, you know, show a deeper meaning in the verses that's not there. And the reason is not because the depth is not there. It's because the depth is being told to you by Moses. What I always say is, in the book of Dvarim, read it out loud. Read it out loud at the table. Read it out loud to yourself. Still, though, it is the Torah portion of Ekev, Deuteronomy 8, Dvarim Chet. And let's just read some of the verses that we should all know, because some of these verses are the classics of Jewish literature and Jewish liturgy. Okay, so for example, here's one of the famous verses. It says about the manna bread. It says, "V'yancha v'yarvecha v'yaravecha v'yarivecha," and he a little bit, he challenged you and he starved you. V'achilecha et haman. But then he fed you the manna bread. Asher lo yadata. V'lo yadun avotecha. Which you didn't know. Which your forefathers didn't know. Leman ha'diyecha. In order to let you know. Ki lo alalechem levado yichi adam. For not on bread alone shall man live. Ki al kol motza pi Adonai yichi adam. For whatever God comes out of God's mouth will a person live. God's the decider. He's the feeder. You're not going to make just bread for yourself and feed. You didn't create yourself. That's what that verse is really about. You didn't create yourself. You're a created being. And God's got you on a path. So, and he fed you the manna in order to tell you, that's actually how it works. I feed you the manna. When you do make bread for yourself, or when you make a living for yourself, just know that I'm really actually feeding you. It's just through the, it seems like you're feeding yourself. The truth is I'm feeding you. Or worst case scenario is that you really are feeding yourself and I'm not feeding you and therefore you're on your own. But if you really want to live the right way, let God be the one who's feeding you. Understand that all the stuff that comes into your hand is from Hashem. So let's say thank you, Hashem, for the bread that you've given us, the life that you have given us. And I just spoke to a friend of mine, and she told me that her husband passed away from a brain cancer. And she's raising her 5 kids, and I just realized how much we have to be thankful for every minute that we have. There was also a soldier that was killed here in Israel by friendly fire when he went to pray. And it's a horrible accident and a horrible friendly fire, but the bottom line is we have to be so thankful for every minute that we have in this world. And it is, again, lo alalechem levado yichi adam. Man shall not live by bread alone. Ki al kol motza pi Adonai yichi adam. For whatever comes out of God's mouth, a person shall live. And then we hear about, speaking of bread, v'achalta v'savata u'birachta et Adonai Elohecha ala aretz atova asher natan lach. And you shall eat, and you shall be sated, and you shall bless Hashem, your God, on the land, the good land, which God has given you. I'm actually thinking about changing the name of the show to the good land with Yishai Fleischer. I really like this brand, the good land. And I started looking at, of course, all the internet properties are all taken up by all kinds of silly stuff. But I was thinking to myself, the good land, that's like a brand. I you know what? If I was Israel, I am Israel, but we are all Israel. We are, if you're listening to the show, you are Israel, one way or another. I was thinking to myself, Israel's like tagline should be like, you know, like visit Israel, the good land. The good land. That's just what it is, the good land. And if you guys could give me any hats that have the good land on it, I'm really looking for that. Maybe even a Milwaukee, the good land. And I'll forever be thankful for knowing the Algonquin Milwaukee for the good land. Yes, yes, I'll forever be thankful to you-know-who, Alice Cooper, for teaching me that.
In fact, isn't Milwaukee an Indian name?
Yes, Pete, it is. Actually, it's pronounced Miliwake, which is Algonquin for the good land.
I was not aware of that.
Here it is in the Torah again. And this here, by the way, is a positive commandment to also bless God after eating bread. And let's just do maybe just a few more verses. Here's one of the famous ones. Also, these are all so famous, but this one became a Hebrew idiom. V'amarta bilvavecha, and you shall say to yourself, kochi ve'etzim yadi asalei techai lazeh. You shall say to yourself, remember what we learned just now about the bread alone, that you may think that you did it. V'amarta bilvavecha, you may say to yourself, kochi ve'etzim yadi asalei techai lazeh. My strength and the power of my hand made all this success for myself. So the next line says, that's of course the negative. You know, that God forbid, here we would read it today like this. God forbid you should say to yourself, my strength and the power of my hand gave me all of this success. And then the next verse says, V'zacharta et Adonai Elohecha, ki hu anoten lecha koach lasot chayel, leman ikim et brito, and you shall remember that it is Hashem who gave you strength to do valor, to be successful, so that he shall fulfill the covenant which he swore to your forefathers as is this day, like as is today, like it's still alive today. Now, what's so great about this is that it does not mean that God will make it all happen for you. It means he will give you the strength. So if you have the strength in your hands and in your arm, if you have the power and you do, that's great. That's what God says. Do that. It's just, he says, recognize that it's me who gives you that power behind the scenes. Recognize that power. Speaking of recognition of power, yesterday I was walking in Tel Aviv and I saw all these cranes and I felt the power of Tel Aviv and of Israel rushing forward in strength and in just a sense of destiny, of forward momentum. And it was just gorgeous. What a feeling. And that's what I mean. I saw all these cranes and you could be like, Israel, you so want to push forward. You're doing great. But if you just say, Hashem, you are giving us the strength to move forward, to develop this whole thing, but it's you behind the scenes. And if you could just make that tiny pivot to recognition of God as the power behind the power, then that's really what the Torah portion is telling you. Yes, I will give you strength, but see that I am giving you the strength and it's not your strength. And therefore, don't be idolatrous, but be a believer. Be a believer. I can't leave her if I try. When I saw her face, that means I saw Hashem's glory. I saw Hashem revealed. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I don't know. I'm just making up this song. Maybe you know what it is. Or maybe I'm not making it up. Maybe it's Hashem's revelation in this world, even through those who would be called the monkeys. In any case, God bless you guys out there. Lots of love and lots of blessings from the land of blessings, from the good land. That's right. The good land that is developing with God's strength. He is filling us. It's so interesting, right? He fills us with his presence and he says, now fill the world with my presence. He says, I fill you with strength. Fill this world with my strength. That's really what not only is the whole story of the world about, but especially the time that we're living in. So lots of blessings and lots of love. Write me an email, yishai@yishaifleisher.com. Get out there and do something. And you know what? Don't get lazy. Send me a picture of yourself doing something awesome, being part of the creation of this world, whatever it is. If you're hammering something, if you're chiseling something, if you're, you know, pastoring some sheep, if you're, I don't know, fixing your car, and you feel that God is in your life and that I'm in your life, and that's a merit for me, then I am very, very thankful for that indeed. So, God bless you guys. More great stuff is on the way. Stay tuned. Stay strong. Stay connected. Lots of thanks also to the folks at the Land of Israel Network for getting this show out to the world. You guys are awesome, Ari and Jeremy, and the beautiful farm here in Judea. Come visit us. Come be part of it. You are part of it wherever you are. And shalom.